Quiet, please. Quiet, please. Broadcasting Company presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for tonight is called The Bond. You would think that a man going home after more than half a year here in a little town in France would be happy. I came over here in November on one of those post-war jobs. I've been here in Vignacourt ever since. The house here was built in 1341, and the old cemetery out near the abandoned airfield can tell you how many generations of Rocheforts have lived and died here. It was, of course, the oddest kind of coincidence that I, Andrew Pierre Etienne Rochefort, whose family had been American since the days of Lafayette, should return to his ancestral home. I am the first Rochefort who has stepped inside this house since the First World War, when Colonel Paul-Marie Rochefort died at Chemin des Dames. Madame Simon, who owns the house now, has been a most satisfactory doyenne to me and to Ahmed Ali Ibn Moussa, my Algerian assistant. Even if she does have difficulty comprehending my French, and I hers. I have succeeded in having the ancient piano tuned. There's an American cook here in town who was a piano tuner in civilian life. And Ahmed Ali and I have spent some pleasant evenings, alternately at the piano, and in long and complicated discussions of Christian and Mohammedan theology. Ahmed shares with me an inordinate admiration for the works of Ravel, and in particular the one called Pavane pour une enfant defunte, Pavane for a dead princess. You remember? I remember that this night we'd been talking about the curious quality of fatalism that colors the whole life of the Mohammedan.
It's all prescribed for us, the prophet said, before we're born, you see.
But you do admit that individuals can alter the patterns of their own lives and of others. Don't you, Ahmed?
We only think we alter them, Andrew. Whatever we may do is merely bringing to life the cosmic play script that is already written for us. We're bound by the script as actors are. As a matter of fact, we are actors, playing parts in a drama.
Or a comedy.
Yes, or a comedy that we've never rehearsed, that unfolds for us, minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day.
Yeah, that's reducing life to a pretty uninteresting formula, isn't it?
Oh, no, by all means, no. On the contrary, I find it provides me, at least, with a consuming curiosity to see what's on the next page.
Well, it certainly simplifies things, doesn't it?
It occasionally provides a surprise.
Such as the fact that I'm not going to play the Pavane again for you tonight.
What is written is written.
In that case, I'll just cross up the prophet and play it for you then.
Thank you.
Well, it seems the old gentleman is in some kind of trouble and needs me again.
Can't he get through one evening without calling for help?
I'm sorry. I'll really have to go, you know.
Well, all right. See you in the morning, then.
Right.
Good night. Ahmed.
Yeah?
Was that written to? Turn out the lights, will you, Ahmed? Thanks. Who are you?
Moi? Je suis la princesse.
What?
I am the princess.
Now, wait a minute.
I'm sorry. I heard you playing my song. And I wanted to see you. You play very nicely.
Well, thank you. Where are you? I can't see you.
I'm right here. I can see you.
I'll turn on the light.
Oh, no.
What? Well, why not?
Well, if you turn on the light, I'd have to go away.
Go away? Go home, you mean?
It isn't exactly home. It's where I'm staying.
Did you run away from your mother?
No. I don't have any mother.
Oh.
Could you play some more, please?
Why? What would you like to hear?
My song, please.
The one I was playing? Why do you call it your song?
Because I'm the princess. I think.
You have a name, though.
Oh, yes. Joan. In French, it's Joan.
That's a very pretty name.
Yes. Please play.
All right. Wouldn't you like a chocolate bar to take with you?
I don't know what that is.
It's nice to eat.
No, thank you.
Well, maybe your folks would like it.
I don't have any folks. you have?
Me? Oh, yes. I have a wife.
You don't have a little girl?
No. Not yet.
I could be a little girl if you wanted me to.
You could.
Maybe you wouldn't want me to.
Well, I don't know, Joan. I haven't seen you yet.
Well, someday you can see me. If you really want to.
I'd like to very much.
But now I have to go.
Would you like me to go with you? It's awfully dark out. And it's late.
Oh, no. I'm not afraid of the dark. I will kiss him now.
In the dark, I felt the touch of the child's lips on my forehead. And I was conscious of a sweetness and a sadness that was almost a physical blow. And she spoke again in the darkness.
Oh, what?
I called to her. Joan, wait. Wait, child.
Play my song some other night and I'll come back.
And then the door closed and I was alone. I sat for a long time in the dark, thinking of what the war had done to so many thousands of children. Nameless, homeless, hopeless. And it was a long time before I began suddenly to wonder. This little girl, this little princess spoke English. Where did she learn that? And where did she learn the name of the song? Why was she afraid of the light? And I smiled to myself as I thought vaguely of a little girl ghost. But my dreams when I'd gone to bed in the dark were of a little girl who skipped by my side and called me father, but who faded into nothingness when I reached for her hand. I questioned Ahmed about her. He knew nearly all the unhappy, skinny children of Vigna Court.
None of that description, Andrew. I'm sure I remember.
I asked Miss Lewis, the Quaker girl at the little hospital.
No. I'm certain I've never seen a child that answers to that. You say her name is Joan?
Joan. That's right. I've never seen her.
Well, new children appear almost every day. I'll watch for her, Andrew.
I watched the children of the town from my office window. I found myself paying only half-hearted attention to the ponderous trivialities the town dignitaries brought to my desk. I found myself listening for a certain voice and the clamor of children playing somberly in the street. You will pardon me, I am sure. I've always considered myself a practical, down-to-earth person. And I wish you to consider the effect such an occurrence has upon such a man. You can understand, I am sure, that I was forced to two almost inescapable conclusions. The first, that I had seen a ghost, I discarded at once. Almost at once. The second, that I had had an extraordinarily vivid dream. This conclusion I accepted. But Ahmed,
I am not so sure you're right, Andrew. There's a way, you know, to make sure.
I had almost forgotten that.
Play my song some other night and I'll come back.
It wasn't merely curiosity. Something about this sweet, childish voice had aroused sentiments in me that I didn't know I possessed. Margaret and I have been married 7 years. We had resigned ourselves to the fact that we should probably always be childless. But Joan, the homeless, fatherless, motherless waif who had come to me in the darkness, might she not be the child Margaret and I wished we could have? I determined to try to bring her back. Yes, I admit I felt foolish as I sat down in the dark at the piano. And I placed my flashlight beside the keyboard. I was to regret that. It was very dark and very quiet as I began. Where did you come from?
I just came in.
Where have you been all this time, child?
Oh, out there.
I've been looking everywhere for you.
But you didn't play my song?
I was afraid it wouldn't bring you.
Did you really want
me? I wanted you very much.
I'm very glad. I was afraid nobody would want me.
Joan, where do you live?
Well, I'm not sure.
Well, what do you mean by that?
I'm just not sure. I don't remember very well.
Well, but... Well, Joan, haven't you any parents?
Parents? No.
Are they?
Well, they're not dead. They're just not.
I don't understand you, dear.
Why did you call me dear?
Well, I...
Is it because you love me?
Why?
Is it? Do you love me?
Yes, Joan.
Do you have a little girl of your own?
No.
I wish I could be a little girl.
Well, perhaps you could.
I could call you Mothman?
Why, yes.
I would have a mama, too?
Oh, yes.
I would like that. Oh, I would like it very much.
Shall I turn on the lights now so we can see each other?
No. You couldn't see me if you turned on the lights. Are you afraid I'm not pretty?
I'm sure you're pretty.
I don't know.
You'd have blue eyes and dark hair.
Yes.
And you'd have a pretty little snub nose.
With freckles?
With freckles.
Is that the way you want me?
Exactly.
Would my mama love me too?
As much as I do, darling.
You might not love me if you knew all about me.
Oh, yes, I would.
I would love you and mama very much. All my life I would love you.
Then it's settled. Now, let's have a look at you, shall we? I picked up my flashlight and pressed the switch. I called, Joan! Joan! But there was no answer. I sprang up and flicked the wall switch. The bare bulb hanging from the ceiling threw every object in the room into bright relief. I was alone. And as I stood there, dazed in the sudden brightness, I heard a small sound. I need not tell you of the bitterness in my heart when I realized what I had done. I need not tell you of the agony that sent me racing into the night outside, calling frantically for the child. I needn't tell you of the doubt and wonder, and the wild thoughts that clutched at me. Was it a dream? It couldn't have been a dream. Was it a ghost I had seen? I couldn't bring myself to believe that. And yet, I took leave of absence. Hockman and I and Miss Lewis searched every corner of the town. We took long trips into the country, delved into ancient deserted houses, questioned hundreds of people.
There is another single place to look, Andrew.
It was a dream, Andrew.
But I knew it couldn't have been a dream. And though my friends tried their best to dissuade me, I could not give up my search. Night after night, I sat at the piano. But never the sound of a softly opening door, never anything but silence and solitude and an overpowering sense of guilt. And I fell ill. Hockman and Miss Lewis were with me a great deal.
Can you break this, Andrew?
Watching me, nursing me, stilling my delirium.
Take it easy, old boy.
At last the fever passed and I opened my eyes to the same dingy, ancient room in the house of my forefathers. Then, lying alone in my bed at night, I came to the final, inescapable conclusion. Joan did not exist. Joan had lived in this house in some other time.